5 o'clock. WHPC 90.3 FM, and it's Friday too. That's two great pieces of news for you.
Gonna make the magic happen.
And the third is that it's time for American at Radio on WHPC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, here as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I got a fourth piece of good news.
What?
We're covering the Rolling Stones again, of course,
oh,
for the How
yeah.
Music Changed series. Yeah, this is part 38 in our series dedicated to the Stones. And it's interesting because where we are right now, this is like pretty much marking the 20th anniversary of the band's career at this point in time where we would be covering. We're up to the year 1980. Well, pretty close. 1981, anyway, when this
awesome.
Album was released. It was called Tattoo You. It was the
18th. Year my dad took me to see the Stones.
Really? In 81? Is that right? So you saw the Tattoo You tour.
There you go.
That's interesting. So, because you know what happened, Heidi? The reason this album even exists is because of people like you. The Stones knew that they were going to be going out on tour, but they didn't have any real new album. Since Emotion, basically the last thing was Emotional Rescue, they didn't want to tour on the back of the older album, so they needed to have some new product out.
How about that?
So they had to basically create something. So they ended up going through they went through their backlogs. And they just like threw together a bunch of leftover tracks from previous sessions.
Oh, I ate leftovers?
Really, the whole album is basically only came into existence because the band wanted to have some product that somebody like you would buy the album after you sold
them
on
tour. Actually, we didn't buy the album. My parents were too cheap.
Well, did you ever buy it?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think I've ever bought a Rolling Stones album in my life.
Really?
Really.
So you got into them through your brothers then, I suppose.
Probably.
How about that? Well, the point is, they were recording, you know, through albums like Emotional Rescue and Some Girls. They had done an awful lot of recording, as we heard some of the outtakes when we were covering Some Girls. Some of them were quite good. So they were going through, like, this box of unfinished tracks. Some of them didn't have any vocals. No words were written or anything. And they were just figuring out what they could do to throw something together so that they'd have something to tour on. You don't want to not have product if you're touring.
Sure.
It was like the golden rule. So they ended up compiling these songs, and it ended up being their 18th American studio album that was released. And it's an interesting story about the song that became the hit single off of the album. To this day, one of the most popular Rolling Stones songs ever, the song Start Me Up.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to let Chris Kimsey tell the story here. As it comes, again, taken directly from Keith Richards' book called Life. Miss You, their other huge number one hit, and Start Me Up were actually recorded on the same day. When I say on the same day, Miss You took about 10 days to get the final master. And then when it was done, they went and did Start Me Up. Start Me Up had been a reggae song recorded in Rotterdam 3 years earlier. When they started playing it this time, it wasn't a reggae song. It was what we know today as the great Start Me Up.
How about that?
It was
crazy.
Keith's song. He just changed it. Maybe after the disco thing of Miss You, he went to it with a different approach, sort of like a one-off, you know, attempt at something new.
Right.
And it was the only occasion I've ever recorded two masters on the same session. It didn't take long to get down. And when we got to the take that everyone felt, oh, that was good, Keith came in and listened to it, and he said, "It's all right. It sounds like something I've heard on the radio. It should be a reggae song." He didn't want to change it. So he goes, he said, "Wipe it," meaning erase it.
Right.
Get rid of it. He was still toying with it, but he didn't like it. I remember Keith saying at one point that he would prefer to wipe all the masters after they'd been done and released, so no one could go back and fiddle with them. Of course, I didn't wipe it, and it became the big song that you hear on Tattoo You 3 years later. Here's the song that Keith Richards almost erased.
Stop me up, I'll never stop.
song that got to be just about as popular as Brown Sugar
in
the band's repertoire. Something that they would probably, almost certainly, would still be guaranteed to be playing live when they go out. In that version, not the reggae version. That
this
Keith
is true.
Was trying to basically
that he
push
was trying
down
to
everybody's
push, yeah.
throat, right? It ended up going to number two on the pop chart. Stayed there for 3 weeks. Why did it not go to number one, you might be asking?
Oh.
It was kept out of the number one spot by two different records. The first week, it was Arthur's Theme by Christopher Cross, which good. Held the number one spot.
Because people have such good taste.
Right, exactly. And the next 2 weeks, it was Hall & Oates with Private Eyes went to number one for the next 2 weeks, forcing Tattoo U to never be able to chart any higher than its number two position. Lord. I'm sorry, Start Me Up, to get no higher than its number two position. It did sell 4 million copies. The album did.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty awesome. And it was also the last Rolling Stones album to go to number one. Now, we're talking the album now, not the single.
Right.
Every album that the Stones released since Sticky Fingers, studio album, went to the top of the charts. Sat at number one. This is the last record to do that. This ends that streak right here. So it's interesting that this is show number 38, as I said, covering the Rolling Stones, and we've covered just about 20 years in history. We'll probably be able to cover the next 30 years in about one quarter as many shows. So
go fast.
1.5 times longer in real time, and yet we'll probably be able to condense this down to getting it done in about maybe only about another 10 or 12 shows for the whole
so
remainder.
You say.
We'll see.
We will.
We'll see if I'm capable of that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the thing about Tattoo U that was cool, I'm going to try to play the whole album. I'll start playing some tracks back to back, actually, so I don't have to do as much talking. But it's interesting in the way that it was put together. It was laid out, and don't forget, this is the vinyl days. There was a side one, side two. Side one was the rocking side. Side one had pretty much all upbeat, really strong, hard-hitting songs. Side two had much quieter songs, much more contemplative, something which was a bit unusual for the Stones. And it made for a really, really great listening experience. It was nice to hear the Stones lightening up and getting a bit introspective on the second side. But let's get through some of these great rock numbers first from the same album. Here's another great rocker from the album Tattoo. Here's Hang Fire. I don't think you'd be too surprised if I told you that track dated from the Some Girls sessions, which was them coming, you know, basically breaking into their punk phase or their reaction to the punk situation that was about.
Right.
Which is why that album was so rocking, and this song really fits in really well with that sort of style.
Yeah, with that theme, yeah.
It was also one of the singles taken from the album, along with Start Me Up. Hang Fire went to number 20 on the pop charts. Meanwhile, there was a few other rockers on the same side of the album, so let's play what could be considered the heavy blues track. This is called Slave.
Do it, do it, do it.
is a good example of a song that had overdubs put on it that gave it its strength. That was probably really just, as we had heard, a lot of those backing tracks were really just jams. And that is a relatively simple song, so that probably was one of the jams that they didn't have anything for.
Worked out for, right, yeah. It wasn't a fully formed thought.
So when Chris Kimsey, the engineer or producer, dug through, you know, spent some weeks digging through the stuff, found that track, and Mick, it's likely that Mick was the only person who went into the session to try to basically work on it, since it was essentially done in every other way. So Mick goes into the studio, writes his own words, and dubs his vocals on there, and then they dubbed on the saxophone bit. That's Sonny Rollins.
Oh, wow.
Playing sax on that track.
That's a nice touch.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Definitely pretty cool. Well, you don't have a great Rolling Stones album, at least a great latter-day Rolling Stones album with at least one, you know, great, you know, kick-butt Keith song on it, or one at least interesting Keith song on it. And in this instance, it's just Keith being Keith once again, you know, basically straight-up rock and roll, singing about one of his girlfriends. I can't tell you which one, and I can't even tell you what the title means, but I think you can more or less handle that for yourself. Here's a little T&A. Straight up rock and roll right there from Keith, little T&A. We're playing the entirety of the album Tattoo You today by the Rolling Stones. It could perhaps be called their last truly great album, although we'll see if that's debatable as we move forward through their history. You mentioned that this album was number one. It was actually set at number one for 9 weeks in the United States. It's a good run. A really nice run to be sitting at number one. I mentioned already that side one of the album was the rocking side. We've heard four tracks already from side one, and I think you would agree so far that these all qualify.
They're all rockers.
Straight up. I'm not going to let you down in that regard either, I promise. This is why this album was so interesting, the way it was broken up. Here's another, I guess you could say, a blues-based track from the album, and a good rocker. This is Black Limousine. Proving two things there. Not only that they could still rock like crazy, but that they were definitely one of the best blues bands still. They were taking that great blues feel and basically rocking it really hard. And even on latter-day albums, the stuff that's coming up in the future from this point in time, every now and then when they go back to that, you get to see the band at their full power. It's really something to behold.
Yeah, they own it.
I know I've got some, like, unusual tracks, some B-sides, and stuff that wasn't even put on albums. That is some of the best stuff that they've done in the late 80s and the 90s. So we'll be getting to that in future shows. But right now, focusing, of course, on Tattoo U and on the rock and roll side of it, we got one left. Another super up-tempo track, very much reminiscent of what was happening around the time of Some Girls. Quick number. This is called Neighbors.
Neighbors, 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 neighbors.
Charlie's good tonight, isn't he? Great drums on that track. Really great.
Did Charlie do them?
Oh, yeah, I would imagine. I think I can recognize. He pretty much plays on most of the stuff from this point going on. I mean, the only time that there was somebody else that was sitting in usually would be if when they had the different producers who were able to sit in.
Oh, okay.
Like Jimmy Miller, but Jimmy Miller's out of the picture at this point in time. And you can tell Charlie when he's got that certain really cool backbeat feel, which is really, he's underrated in that sense. It's great when he does it. And that live snare sound, which makes it sound almost contemporary again. This production on this album is like, we've come full circle. We're back to making records like this again, where the instruments are sounding live and they're not overproduced. You know, this album soon became antiquated. We were just talking about this, me and Ron.
Right, because, in terms of the production values.
Yeah, production values began to change drastically later on in the 80s, and everything had to be overproduced, but this was before that happened.
I pretty much hated that
stuff. That was terrible. Now, Jan Wenner of Rolling Stone interviewed Mick Jagger a number of years later in the 90s, and was calling this album the Stones' most underrated album, and Jagger himself replied, "I think it's excellent, but all the things I usually like, it doesn't have. It doesn't have any unity of purpose or place or time, because the tracks was pulled from all over the place."
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to play side two of the album, and the mood changes completely, and it stays changed now. We just finished the rocker side. Now we go to the mellow side, and it starts with the song, sung in falsetto, Mick doing that same thing that he was doing on Miss You all over again with his voice, with a song that you couldn't help but wonder if it was maybe singing about Keith and the problems that Keith had been going through legally and with drugs. It's called Worried About You. I wonder.
could almost call that a power ballad of sorts.
Yeah, you could.
Rolling Stones. But I love that song. I always did. I think Mick did a great job putting the lyrics on top of that. Now, that track dates all the way back to Black and Blue. So Ronnie Wood isn't even on guitar on that track. In fact, Wayne Perkins, one of the guys that the Stones was auditioning at the time,
is the guy
He's the guy playing guitar on that. So Ronnie's not even on the track. This next track, not only is it pre-Ronnie Wood, it's pre-Wayne Perkins. The next track goes all the way back to Goat's Head Soup.
Whoa.
In this
it
instance,
really bent, went into the bin.
1972. The track was 10 years old before they brought it back up and they start doing overdubs on it. In this instance, Mick Taylor is the guitar player on this track. In fact, he even had to end up suing the band to get credit for royalties since he appears on the album.
Oh, wow.
So here is the Rolling Stones with Mick Taylor, believe it or not, from 72 on the original track. With new lyrics written by Mick Jagger, released, of course, on the album Tattoo You, this is called Tops.
Every man is the same, come on, I'll make you a star. I'll take you a million miles from all this, but you want a better star. Come on, come on. Have you ever heard those opening lines? You should leave the small town way behind. I'll be your partner, show you a step with me. I'll take you to the top. Step on the ladder, toe in the pool. You're such an actor, you don't need no acting school. Don't need no casting couch, be a star in bed. Baby, I swear we're never gonna stop. Baby, I'll take you to the top. Don't let the world pass you by. Don't let the world pass you by. Don't let the world pass you by. Yeah.
Told you side two was the mellow side.
Oh, yeah.
Really setting a mood there for the side. One of the most dreamy things that the band had ever released. But it's beautiful. It's pensive. It sounds mature for the band. And it really does set it up. In fact, let's play the next track because I think they go well together back to back as they do on the album as far as establishing that really quiet, pensive mood. This track is called No Use in Crying.
It's not real.
Back-to-back mellow tracks from Tattoo You, leaving us with just one more song to play from the album. The last song, the song that ended the album, was the third single also. It went to number 13 on the pop charts, which is very respectable, of course. This is another one of those tracks that we didn't know it at the time, but this is also goes all the way back to 1972. This is Mick Taylor playing guitar on this song, even though Ronnie Wood's in the video, even that accompanied it. You might remember the video. The song I'm talking about is Waiting on a Friend.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of cool. You see Keith walking down the street,
mm-hmm.
and he meets Mick Jagger and Peter Tosh sitting on the front
stoop
of a brownstone.
A brownstone, yes.
Right? And it's kind of cool that brownstone is the exact same one that is on the cover of Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti, if you didn't know that.
Oh, I didn't.
And then they walk down the street, and they go into a bar. And this is another thing that nobody knows anymore, but I knew it. I saw the video, and because I used to hang out in that bar. It was St. Mark's Place. At First Avenue and St. Mark's in New York City. If you was on the southeast corner, I remember there was a pizza place on the opposite corner. They used to always hang out, and then we'd cross and hang out in St. Mark's. It was kind of cool to see them walking into the bar that I was always hanging out in. Like, whoa, check it out. But the bar's long gone. The song is not. The thing to listen for here more than anything else is, once again, it's Sonny Rollins who comes up on sax, and he plays probably one of the best sax breaks in the history of rock and roll. Sorry to the big man, but I got to give it up for Sonny because this is just fantastic the way he plays on this track. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week, but here's the Rolling Stones with Waiting on a Friend.